This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Would you like to talk with Zorba? A line is open now for you at 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our call, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes. Is altruism inherent, and especially is it inherent or inborn in babies? Some very interesting research that looks at altruistic behavior from an evolutionary point of view.
Interesting. What else?
Information. Clearly, we like to give things at this time of year. What kind of reward do we get when we actually give people others? We'll talk about what happens to us when we give to others.
Could improve our health, maybe?
Yeah, could improve our
interesting
health. Could
stuff.
Make a difference.
And our recipe?
Julie's Baked Acorn Squash with Peanut Butter. It's that time of year to enjoy squash and sweetness and kind of comfort food. And this is a wonderful recipe.
Squash and peanut butter.
It's delicious.
800-462-7413, toll free. A listener joins now, Zorba, from Logan, Utah. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question for Zorba. My 3-year-old son has, since he was a little baby, has had a rash on the sides of his face. And his skin is kind of splotchy, and it's dry and bumpy, and it seems to come and go. And it doesn't really depend on the weather. It's there in the summer. It's there in the winter. So I'm just kind of bewildered as to what it is.
How long has he had it?
He's had it since he was probably 6-7 months old.
And is he affected by it? Does it itch or hurt?
No, he doesn't seem to be bothered. I don't even think he realizes it's there.
Yeah, what about when he looks in the mirror and puts his face on in the morning? Then he might realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. I know I would realize.
So he's been seen by doctors for this or not?
No, he hasn't. Uh-huh. I haven't. It hasn't seemed to bother him, so I haven't, you know, taken him to a doctor
sure.
for it.
Sure. Childhood eczema? Did he have eczema as a child at all?
No, uh-uh.
So what kind of soap do you use? What do you wash his face
well,
with?
Well, I have tried all kinds of soap. Right now I'm using a natural soap.
Good. Good. You know, one of the issues often when we look at skin on the face especially is sometimes it gets too dried out, and soap dries out our skin. It gets rid of the sort of the fat layer on our skin. It gets rid of the emollients that are actually there. And for some children and for some adults, they can't tolerate. So that's the first step you look at it. Have you ever tried to get rid of it with over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream?
On a couple times, and it didn't really do anything.
Okay. I've got a couple of recommendations. First of all, rashes are extremely hard to see over the radio. I know it's tough.
Yeah.
I've got x-ray vision. I can leap tall buildings at a single bound, but a rash kind of puts me back. If we had Skype on the computer, then I could say, hold your child up to the computer, and we could do telemedicine, which I think is the medicine of the future. But given that we don't have that, next time he goes in for his well baby check, I'd recommend you talk to your doctor about prescription strength hydrocortisone cream. It's 2.5%, very gentle. It's okay for babies. There's some other creams that are non-steroid creams that are also a very good Protopic, I think is the name of one of them, which also is excellent for this. And what I would do is I would just try to get rid of it. He may have a blotch of eczema.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
just a blotch of it on his skin, and use a little stronger, but not massively stronger, hydrocortisone cream, and sometimes that'll do it. Once again, when you go there, you're going to try to say, yeah, I got rid of the soaps. But before I even did that, I would get over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream. You can buy it in 0.5%.
Okay.
In some states, you can buy it 1%. Put it on the blotchy part of his face 3 times a day for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Just see if it works.
Okay.
And that's what I would kind of look at it. And sometimes once you clear it up, it goes away magically. So.
Okay. That would be great. And, you know, he's a redhead. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, if his skin is more sensitive.
Well, I think it makes him more handsome.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
I think
I do
redheads
too.
We have a number of redheads in our family.
Uh-huh.
And I just think, but you're right, because redheads do have more issues with their skin, especially certain areas. They're more likely to get sunburn and so on. But
yeah.
Redheads are highly valued in our society because they are so rare.
I strongly agree.
Well, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
I always thought balding was more handsome.
Balding. At our age, it's balding. At that age, now, it's redheads.
Now, what did you mean when you said when he looks in the mirror and puts his face on?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, what women... You notice that she...
But he's
right
a boy.
Of course. But you notice that she commented right away. It was a joke. It was a joke. You don't get it because you're a guy.
Oh.
But does Monica put her face on in the morning?
But she isn't a guy.
No, she isn't a guy, but she doesn't put her face on in the morning.
Moving right along, and speaking about kids, you say there is some evidence that if you happen to be a giving person, altruistic, you may have been born with this trait.
Well, there's some interesting things where they look at babies, and there have been a couple of studies, and this goes along with a number of studies that I've actually been reading lately, whether or not infants, we're talking about infants prior to the time when you teach them to be polite.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 months, 1 year, 18 months before they really understand please and thank you. Not 3 and 4 year olds where you've taught them how to be polite. Mm-hmm. When they put them in test situations, they appear to actually help the caregiver, mommy or daddy or whoever's taking care of them, do things. So they were actually looking at children and comparing them to chimpanzees. So chimpanzees point to things when they want you to get them and give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
But children don't always do that. And what they did was they looked in a behavioral model, looked at kids and looked at adults and had a mother or a father lose something and couldn't find it, but it was in clear vision of the child. And they found out that the children were much more likely than not to point to the thing that the children would realize that mom was looking for her keys, for instance, the jingle and jangle, and it's, you know, it's a habit behavior. She's going out of the house. The child knows where the keys are. The mom is looking around, and a 12-year-old will often point to the keys.
But sometimes not. Sometimes yes and
but
sometimes.
More often than not, chimps never do it. They never point to the keys. They only point to the food.
So are we saying that all of us are born with this?
No. There's some very interesting issues that have to do with altruistic behavior. When you give something to somebody else from a Darwinian evolutionary point of view, you're not getting anything back for it. So you give something. You say, here, let me share this piece of food with you or this sweet. Why would you do it? Because you don't actually get any value. Yeah. It doesn't make you stronger and stronger for your offspring.
Yeah.
The theory now is that we innately as humans may have tribal instincts because what we do for others helps our tribe, the group around us, and makes our tribe more likely to survive and therefore the offspring more likely to survive. And these studies show that it actually may be innate in young children. It may not be learned behavior because this is prior to when we thought the kids have actually learned things such as this.
So it is in the genes, at least maybe.
Well, maybe in the genes. Whether or not things are in the genes or learned, nature nurture has been an issue all along because, in fact, it's both nature and nurture. But I think during this time of year, it's kind of important to think about altruism and doing things for others. I mean, it does innately make us feel good. I mean, why would you put money in a Salvation Army can and give $2 or $3? I mean, you're not thinking of yourself, but you're thinking of that other person. And I think some of this appears to be innate or learned very, very early on in human development, and we're simply passing it down to our kids.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Dr. Zorba Pastor. To Aurora, Colorado we go now. Hello.
Hello there. How are you today?
We're fine. What's up?
You know, I have a situation. My wife, who was about 68 years old, about 2.5 years ago developed a case of RLS, Restless Leg Syndrome. And it's been a very difficult thing to manage. She currently is taking Requip as a way of managing it, and her doctor has mentioned that she probably will need to take it all of her life. The way it affects her is that it gives her involuntary leg jerks during the time that she's not taking her Requip, and it's been kind of a nuisance. I was wondering if you've heard anything about that, if you know anything about treatment, if this is a situation that she'll be tackled with the rest of her life, and then also whether it's related to any other disorders of the nervous system.
Now, is she affected by this just at night while she's in bed or during the day as well?
It used to be just at night, and now it has gotten to where it starts earlier in the afternoon and will continue on if she doesn't take the medicine. Once she takes the medicine, it allows her to relax and, as a matter of fact, almost puts her to sleep. So she has to kind of manage when during the evening she takes the medicines or it'll just kind of knock her right on out. And she's on a very low dose of the medicine, as a matter of fact, but still this situation has been increasingly annoying.
Who's she seeing? Who? This is her family doctor or internist?
It is her family doctor.
RLS is really interesting. It's been around for many, many years. And for years, we had no effective treatment. We used to give quinine, which really didn't work. And the feds finally took quinine off the market because it really didn't work. We'd give it for leg cramps, and there was no scientific evidence. It was just one of those old remedies. And then we gave folk remedies, vitamin E, which for some people actually does appear to work. We're not sure why. We've given natural remedies such as you take a hot bath before you go to sleep. You do a certain amount of stretching exercises, prior to going to sleep. And then, lo and behold, we found out that anti-Parkinsonian drugs, Requip is an anti-Parkinsonian drug, appear to help people with RLS. And so they did a few studies. They got a couple of drugs approved, and there was a huge flurry of advertising on TV. You have RLS, you have RLS, you have RLS, take our drug. You know, huge, because what they had to do, it's interesting, is sort of develop a market for their drug, even though, in fact, there really was a market there. So all of a sudden, people started coming in and saying, "What? You know, I need something for RLS." So first of all, you want to make sure the diagnosis is really there. I mean, she has these twitches and other things. Your family doctor probably made the diagnosis correctly, but your family doctor may not have made the diagnosis correctly. So one thing you want to do is consider a second opinion from a sleep specialist or a neurologist to find out if she really has RLS. That's step one. I mean, does she really have it? Mm-hmm. Step two is there are a variety of other drugs besides Requip that are worthwhile in RLS that have different side effects. They're anti-Parkinsonian drugs, but they just haven't been approved. We use them as doctors in something called off-label. When the FDA approves something, it simply allows the drug companies to advertise it. Once the drugs are actually approved, we can use it for anything we want to, pretty much so, almost all drugs. So there may be another drug that doesn't have side effects that works for her. And if she's having this problem during the day, RLS is usually a problem that only bothers people when they're going to sleep at night. But if she is not tolerating the drug, if it makes her sleepy and she's having problems during the day, I question the diagnosis. And I definitely question the treatment. So you need a second opinion. And if your doctor is a good doctor, they will welcome a second opinion. If they do not welcome a second opinion, I do not consider them to be a good physician. And I'm serious with that. Every doctor should say, sure, I don't mind somebody else looking at this. I think that's always not. If not, I always have to say, well, you lose a lot of points with that in my book. So good luck. And you're great for advocating for your wife. That's really important.
Great. Thank you so very much. I appreciate it, Dr. Zorba. Have a great day, won't you?
You too, and yes, we appreciate the call. Now, restless leg syndrome, you said had been around for a number of years, but it wasn't around when I was a kid, or I don't think
it was around. It wasn't around.
So how does all of a sudden something start being an illness?
Well, first of all, it was there all along. And what happened is we had no effective treatment.
Well, I never knew anybody who had legs that jerked around when they went to
Well, first of all, you may not have known it. Let's say the prevalence is, you know, say 1 in 500. It may not. You don't have 500 friends. The people that you
I don't have five friends.
You don't have five friends. But then the issue is, who talks about their legs jerking around before they go to sleep? I mean, you'd be a jerk to talk about.
Very good.
You like that?
Yeah.
It was a Jerry Lewis thought. You'd be a jerk. But, I mean, you don't talk about those things to other people. And I hate to say it, but this is very similar to erectile dysfunction. First of all, we called it impotency, which was an awful word. Impotency is disgusting. It's an awful word. But nobody talked about it. It was just, well, you got old and then you had that. And once a drug came out, you found out, well, a lot of people had the problem. Now, you want to know what's more common than ED that they don't talk about? It's premature ejaculation.
Yeah.
There are more men who are troubled with premature ejaculation, younger than older, than guys with ED. But because there's not a drug that is advertising about, you know, premature ejaculation, you don't hear about it, but it still exists.
And weren't we talking about restless leg?
Yeah, well, it always comes back to sex, Tom. It always comes back to sex.
At least for one of us. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have problems with my contact lenses. Mm-hmm. I started with the AccuView 2, which was a weekly contact lenses, and my eyes are all the time red when I put my contacts. And I went to the doctor. He said, so let's switch to something else. You know, I tried the daily focus. The problem's still there. I just recently changed to the Air Optics, which just came out. They're new, and they're actually for 1 month. You know, I feel comfortable with the contact, but I still have the redness in my eyes. And as soon as I take off my contact lenses and just put my glasses for a couple of days, mm-hmm. then the redness just goes away.
Yeah.
Is it the water, the solution? What tips can I get?
Now, did you say, I don't know anything about contact lenses. Did you say that the ones you have now you wear for a month and then you throw them away and put different ones in? Is that right?
Yes. And they work great. I see good with them. I don't have no problem except still the redness in my eye.
Well, the other question I have is why not just toss them all away and go ahead and use your glasses?
I don't want to because I like to sleep with, watching TV and stuff like that. So usually when I sleep with my glasses, I break them off. Yeah. So I'd rather have my contact lenses.
Yeah, I understand that completely. My wife has worn contact lenses since she was 12, and she's not 12 anymore. And the fact is she likes her contact lenses a lot, and she likes the way she looks in her contact lenses. A lot of people do not want to wear glasses, unlike Tom Clark, who really does not mind wearing his glasses.
Those people are called vain.
Oh, vain. Well, that's okay. A little bit of vanity is just fine. That's what the fashion industry is about. But getting away from the fashion industry and not moving it down the line in that direction, talking about redness, first of all, you try different contacts, which makes a lot of sense because that can be the issue. And you're using the standard solution that's used with the present contacts you have now, correct? The recommended solution. Before I render my opinion as Judge Zorba, my next question is, do you sleep with your contacts most of the time or not?
Yes, I do.
You do. So you don't take them out during the evening at all?
No, but these contact lenses I just got, that's what it is for. It's night and day.
Oh, I see. So these contact lenses are designed to leave in and you don't take them out?
Yes.
Okay. But there are a couple of options here. First of all, what you want to do is try – do you have trouble taking your contacts in and out, by the way?
Really.
Okay. Couple suggestions. Suggestion number one, for 1 week, take your contacts out every night when you go to sleep. Just do it. See if that's it. Because you want to know whether or not it's the irritant of having, a contact is a foreign body on your eye. Take it out for a week, every single night. See if the redness goes away, in which case you'll know that your eyes need some time without contacts. And it might be every night. It might be every other night. You might find out, gee, I take it out every night. I don't have trouble. You might say, gee, I can leave them in for 2 days and I don't have trouble. You want to find out from a natural point of view if it's simply the contact lens being in too long. That's step one.
Okay.
Step two, if that fails, I would go and get an over-the-counter antihistamine eye drop. There are two over-the-counter ones I recommend. They come in a generic. One is called Vasocon, V-A-S-O-C-O-N, Vasocon A, and the other is called Nafcon, N-A-F, as in Frank, C-O-N.
Okay.
And these used to be prescription eye drops, and they actually have an antihistamine. They have something that works like a decongestant for the eye. I would try those eye drops.
Okay.
They should be safe. They actually should be safe with the contacts in. You'll find out if you put it in and your contacts feel kind of funny, you may have to take them out and put the eye drops in. But this is an antihistamine eye drop. And if that fails, I'd call your doctor and say, I want Acular, A-C-U-L-A-R. Totally different eye drop. It's an eye drop that's sort of like an ibuprofen eye drop. It's a different anti-inflammatory because you've got inflammation of the eye. And so, A, you want to see if it's the foreign body, the contact, reducing the amount of time they do it, or B, whether or not doing it with a decongestant antihistamine combination or an anti-inflammatory work. That's what I would do. You've switched contacts enough. It stays there, so you don't have to go to any more contacts. I think you've discovered it's not the contact. I don't think it's the solution either.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mm-hmm. Zorbas.
And we appreciate the call. Thank you. And by the way, if I offended you and you're a contact lens wearer by calling you vain, I'm sorry. I don't have any email address. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before the break, time to loosen your lips and set the clock for another edition of Rapid Fire. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
And away we go. Our first listener needs to clear up one of your more popular food tips. Quoting, you frequently talk about keeping unused ginger in the freezer. I've frozen it many times, but when I defrost, the ginger is immediately mush. What's your secret?
Don't defrost it. What you do is you grate it frozen. Do not defrost it. Keep it frozen. Grate away, and you'll have a great meal.
Staying with food tips, a listener named Sandy is wondering if you can recommend a good rice cooker. She's tried two now, and they both made a mess with water bubbling over the top and all over the counter.
The best rice cookers are always found in Asian grocery stores because many people who come from the continent of Asia eat rice as their staple. By Asian.
Kelly from St. Augustine, Florida, had a rough Thanksgiving at her sister's house. She writes, part of my contribution to the feast was chopping vegetables, including 40 jalapenos. I should have worn gloves because my fingertips burned for over 24 hours. Did I do permanent damage?
No, you didn't. But I recommend that you change relatives and move them to the upper Midwest because we don't eat hot peppers. That's your ultimate cool
That's
goal.
That's a bad piece of advice. Gloria in Medical Lake, Washington. Medical Lake, an appropriate name for a health show affiliate.
I love it.
Wants to know why her daughter's birth control medicine also prevents migraines.
Because some birth control medicines do prevent migraines. That's the answer.
Simple.
Why? Because that's what happens.
Because it is. Finally, Robin in Nysa, Oregon, can't shake her almond craving. She writes, about a year ago, I started eating sliced raw almonds, preferably frozen. Most of the time, get this, I eat about a pound a day. Is there a problem with eating this amount of almonds?
No, not at all. Only for your pocketbook, because almonds are expensive. But better a pound of almonds than a pound of M&Ms.
Or maybe a pound of beef.
Or better a pound of beef. That's exactly it. There are a lot of things you could eat pound by pound that are not healthy for you. So enjoy your almonds.
The clock has run out for this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Recipe coming up. Don't go away. We also have lots more calls, some more interesting topics to talk over, and our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have callers waiting, but a line is open for you now at 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, it is now recipe time, and for our recipe this week, we are happy to welcome Madison, Wisconsin listener Julie Sinastori. Julie, hi.
Hi there.
Thanks so much for sending in this recipe for Julie's baked acorn squash with peanut butter. How'd you come up with this one?
Well, when I was in college, I worked on an organic farm, and one year we just had a ton of squash, all kinds of squash, and I was getting bored of it, and I wanted something different and interesting and tasty, so I just sort of looked at my shelf and put some things together that seemed to go well, and it worked.
So you looked at the peanut butter and said, hey, this would go good with squash.
Something like that, yeah.
See, Tom, because he's not the most creative cook, has difficulty actually comprehending that people would actually look at food and see combinations that are not necessarily on the back of the package. Usually the back of his packages say, add water and boil.
Well, this is going to be a tough sell for me because I'm not crazy about squash to start out with. And aren't there urban legends about people with squash sneaking in the middle of the night to put them on neighbors' doorsteps? Have you ever done that, Julie?
No, no, but I think that's mostly summer squash.
That's okay.
No, that's the zucchini.
It's the zucchini the size of babies. That's exactly it, the zucchini the size of babies. Actually, when my neighbor brings over a big zucchini, I'm going to wrap it up like a baby, and I'm going to put it on another neighbor's doorstep. I've got my summer joke. Thank you for giving that to
me.
Okay, so baked acorn squash with peanut butter. So it starts out with one acorn squash. Acorn squash is always about the same size. Are they smaller and bigger? I mean, they're kind of the – I think of them as only one size fits all. Is that the way they are?
Well, if you get them at the farmer's market, you can get very small sort of individual serving ones. But I usually look for one about the size of a softball.
Yeah, that's usually what I get when I get acorn squash. 2 tablespoons of natural peanut butter. So you wouldn't use like Skippy.
No. It has to flow. It has to be sort of semi-liquidy, and the commercial process stuff is just a bizarre solid.
But it separates out. So do you, before you do that, you mix your peanut butter up, correct?
Sure, you have to.
Okay.
Right, yeah, just put a butter knife in there and whip it up a little bit. But it should be flowing.
It should come off
the spoon very easily.
Okay, that's really important, because when you get to the bottom of the peanut butter jar, it is not my jar, it's not flowing.
Right.
So in which case, you need a new jar for the recipe. 2 cups of applesauce, what do you use? You make your own?
I wish I had time, but no, I just get the store brand natural unsweetened. But you can use sweetened if you want. If that's all you have on the shelf, then that's fine too. But I use the unsweetened.
Yeah, I like the unsweetened better. And I made applesauce once, and then I didn't make it anymore after that, because it took way too much time for just getting applesauce. I'd rather make something that people would say, wow. Usually people said, oh, this is good applesauce. I mean, applesauce is okay, but the stuff I made just, it wasn't worth the time. 4 tablespoonfuls of honey or maple syrup, which do you prefer?
Well, maple syrup, but it's expensive, so I understand, you know, not everyone can sort of pour gold into their recipes. So honey works just as well. It's just as sweet. And you're more likely, I think, to have it just sitting on the shelf.
Right. Yeah. And actually, 4 tablespoons of maple syrup is not a lot, but the container of maple syrup is usually a bunch of bucks. You're right. I look at the store when I'm getting my pancake syrup, and I go, maple syrup, Cairo syrup, maple syrup, Cairo syrup. Ultimately, I buy the maple syrup instead of the corn syrup, but I always think about it. Cheap is cheap. Cinnamon to taste, right? Cinnamon to taste. So let's make it. Now, so first you cut the squash in half from the stem. How do you cut the squash? I mean, I always have problems with it. I feel like I'm going to cut my hand.
Yeah. Basically, I look at the squash and I look for a nice deep crevice. The acorn squash has those ridges.
Yes.
And I look for a nice deep one. Mm-hmm. And I put a knife, a long knife, like a bread, like a serrated knife, into one of those crevices, and I draw a line.
Okay.
Sort of a guideline.
Okay.
After you make the guideline, you stick a smaller knife in there that isn't serrated with the blade away from you.
Okay.
And you push away until you cut to the top of the squash.
Okay.
Then you take the knife out, flip it over so that you get the other end, put the knife in, blade away from you, push away, and then repeat on the other side. And it should just come right apart in half. But if it doesn't, you put the small knife in there and twist it until it cracks.
And then it should open
right up.
Okay. This better be good, because it's awfully complicated.
It's not that complicated.
Oh, it's not complicated.
I eat acorn squash all the time. There's a website called Howcast, Howcast, and they have little videos on how to do things. I bet on Howcast there's something about an acorn squash. But it's not that difficult, Tom. Tom thinks of squash as opening up a can of squash and doing it. It's not. Not the same thing.
Okay.
Cut the acorn squash in half, utilizing Julie's important way of doing it so you do not cut your finger, from stem to flowering end, and scoop out the seeds. Important, then puncture the inside of the squash with a fork, but not all the way through to the skin. Place the squash in a large casserole dish with open sides. Pour about 2 cups of water into the casserole dish, and then in the opening of the squash halves, put 1 heaping tablespoonful of natural peanut butter in each half. Now, in the top of the peanut butter, put 2 tablespoonfuls of either honey or maple syrup. Cover the honey with maybe 3/4 to 1 cup of applesauce. So that's your layering. Sprinkle the cinnamon on top of the applesauce. Bake for 1 hour. Allow the squash to cool for 10 minutes. Scoop the insides into a bowl, scraping the squash out of the skin very carefully, because you don't want to get the skin. Mash the mixture up with a fork and sprinkle with a little more cinnamon and enjoy. And I think you've got another way of how you scoop it out and mash it. Is that right?
Right. Well, if you're careful and you didn't puncture the skin and you scoop it out and you don't, and the skin doesn't fall apart, you can mash it up and then you can put it back in the skin for serving. And it looks very pretty, especially if you get one of those acorn squashes that's sort of yellow and orange and speckled.
I think it's a delicious thing. And I think presentation is very important. I was never big on presentation, and my wife Penny taught me that when you present things in a beautiful way, especially if you're eating it with other people, they feel good because you've actually shown care in actually presenting it. So I'm big on presentation. So I'm going to make this dish. I'm going to make sure that I make it, and I'm going to be really careful to make sure that I do not puncture the skin. And if I do puncture the skin, I'm not telling you. So thank you very much for sharing this recipe with us. I'm sure that our listeners will come to our website and get it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Julie.
You're welcome.
And for sending us this winning recipe, Julie gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. On we go to Republic, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have some questions about insomnia and some medicines that I can take for it. I've had insomnia for quite some time now, and my doctor got me on prescription medicine, and I don't really care for it, and I'm more interested in the melatonin.
What kind of pills have you been taking?
Well, he's currently got me on Ambien.
Okay, and you were on pills before this. How long have you been on medicines?
Oh, gosh. I hate to say it, but for at least 3 years.
So at least 3 years. And before that, when you weren't feeling very good, did you try melatonin at all?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, first of all, when we look at insomnia sort of in a broad way, there's something called sleep hygiene. And sleep hygiene means that there are a number of things. And if you Google sleep hygiene, you'll come up with a bunch of interesting things on the web. And we'll put some connectors to sleep hygiene on our website for this. But you want to make sure that your bed is the right temperature. You want to make sure that the shades are dark enough, that the pillows are correct. Sometimes adding softer pillows or firmer pillows or bigger pillows or smaller pillows or lighter blankets can be different. You have a TV in the bedroom?
I took it out.
Good. Good. Because that's actually very important. TV is disruptive to sleep. It's not a good way to fall asleep. If you fall asleep and you stay asleep and the TV's on, that's okay. But for a lot of people, it's a highly disruptive thing. It's okay to read a bit in bed, but you want the bed to be for going to sleep. That's what you want it to be. You don't want to sit in bed for 3 or 4 hours in order to be able to go to sleep. So that's the first thing. You want to look at sleep hygiene. Come to the website. We'll put a bunch of stuff on there at ZorbaPastor.org. Now, let's look from a drug point of view. There are a number of drugs that are available besides the sleeping pill Ambien. First of all, some people actually take over-the-counter Tylenol PM, generic equivalent is fine. That has an antihistamine. And the antihistamine makes you sleepy. So some people like that. But other people find they have a drug hangover. Doctors don't like to give it because they say, well, it really is disruptive to sleep. But I have a lot of patients who take it and they go, well, it works fine for me. I take it maybe 4 or 5 days a week. Your goal is not to take something every single night. So that's one possibility. But the other possibility is there's a drug called Neurontin, N-E-U-R-A-N-T-I-N. Gabapentin is the generic name. It's now in a generic. And for some people, 300 to 600 milligrams at bedtime can really be good for sleep. Once again, it's the side effect of this particular drug that you're using, and some people find it very, very useful to take. So you may want to try that. But I think, like you said, you want to try a natural cure before that. So try melatonin. You know, go do the proper sleep hygiene. Try some melatonin. If one tablet doesn't work, take 2 tablets or 3 tablets. The most important thing when you pick your melatonin is to pick your brand.
Yes.
What brand are you wearing?
Well, the brand, there are two ways that you look at the brand. I tell people to buy the house brand, Target, CVS, Walgreens, because they will assure that it's only got melatonin in there. In other words, okay. The reason is they don't want to have their name soiled by not having by having other stuff in there. So I recommend a house brand because they're going to stand behind it. When you have Happy Valley, Nature's Way, La-Di-Da, melatonin, you don't know what that is. I mean, it's a label, so you don't know what's in there. And the other way is to go to consumerreports.org, and you have to pay $5 to be able to use their website for a month and go into their natural website. And what they'll do is they'll tell you the ones they tested. And they make specific recommendations. They don't take commercial money. I love Consumer Reports. I think they're very reliable, and choose their brand. That's the other way to do it. Do not choose a brand that is not a house brand or recommended by a third party, because a lot of the brands are junk. 20% of them have hardly any melatonin in them. Mm. They are regulated like cosmetics because the federal government does not have the backbone to take that away. And that has to do with Utah and has to do with the fact that that there were rules that were changed many, many years ago that I disagree with. But anyway, so you got to find your brand through consumerreports.org or a house brand. That's my recommendation.
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call.
We appreciate it. Thank you. Before the break, Zorba, we have a tip for our over-the-road truck drivers in today's edition of Roadside with Dr. Zorba Pastor.
Rum, 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 rum.
This helpful hint comes to us from Lori in Louisville, Kentucky. She writes, "You mentioned that truck drivers couldn't get enough fiber in their diet because it was awkward to eat cereal in the cab of a truck going down the highway. Just have a glass of milk in the cup holder. You can get a glass or mug with a lid that lets you sip but offers protection from spills. Have the opened box of cereal or small container with cereal in it. Just take a handful of the cereal, put it in your mouth, and then take a sip of milk. Chew, swallow, and repeat."
I love it. I love it. Whoever said that truck drivers were not creative didn't know what they were talking about. That is an absolutely great idea.
Well, a little lacking in hygiene.
Where's the hygiene? If your hands
are
clean.
You got your hand, it's been on the steering wheel.
No, wait a second. You put your hand on a sandwich, right? You hold a sandwich. Is that lacking in hygiene?
Yeah, but it's true.
Yeah, you're holding a sandwich. Well, maybe your hand is lacking in hygiene, but her hand is hygienically clean. Great idea. I love it. We now know how to eat cereal in our car. Go, America, go.
If you have a tip for our friends on 18 Wheels, or you're on the road with a lifestyle question, send it to the show for our next edition of Roadside with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Just send your email to
zorba@wpr.org.
More of your calls coming up, but first we have some really, really interesting information to pass along in our next topic. Later on, our medical myth buster. 800-462-7413, the number to call if you'd like to be with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. If you have a question for Zorba, use this number, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, a little research to talk over, which is quite similar to our topic earlier in the hour, if you were listening, having to do with altruism. It turns out maybe, Zorba, being nicer to other people can make us healthier and help us even live longer?
Well, I mean, the maybe is an interesting issue, and these are things that I've been very involved with for a number of years. When I wrote my book, The Longevity Code, and discovered in my research there really are five spheres that influence your life. It's not just the physical sphere, your numbers. It's your mental sphere, your social sphere, friends and family, your spiritual sphere, what really affects your heart and your soul, mm-hmm. and your material sphere. So if we look at this from a point of view of rewarding things, there was an interesting book that came out, 29 Gifts, A Month of Giving, and How You Can Change Your Life. And this is a woman with multiple sclerosis who went out and then helped other people by giving things and found that she was able to cope with her MS much better, and it made her feel better, and she needed fewer pain medications during that time. And then there are other studies that have shown that volunteerism, when you control for a number of variables, more than 4 hours a week, that older people, senior citizens, were 44% less likely to die during that period. Less likely to die when they volunteered.
If we do volunteer work for others, we're less likely to die.
Well, but when we look at it from a cardiac point of view, and a lot of these things are from the point of view of life and death, a reduction of strokes and heart attacks. And we do that often by reducing the stress hormones in our lives.
Yeah.
Well, stress is me, only me, because life is imperfect. And when you start thinking of other people's, you use a compassionate attitude, that is what can make a difference.
I don't want to throw cold water on this, but there could be a little cause and effect going on here. It could be that people who are healthier are the more likely ones to volunteer, and the people
To some extent, you may be correct, but I've seen it certainly in my regular medical practice. There are people who have problems, and they live with it when they laugh and they do things with other people. I can think of a patient of mine right now who's 92 years of age. She had a leg amputated because she had cancer in her leg, and she volunteers at the senior center, and she knits doilies and napkins for other people, and then she's extremely active all around town in my little town of Oregon where I practice, and she has only one leg. She has trouble getting around, but people help her in and out of her car. Her attitude is great. Her attitude is not bad. And so these studies seem to show that when your attitude is right, it can make a difference for you.
Yeah. And this is a good time of year to talk about. Really, we should be thinking about this all the time.
Absolutely. It's not just this time of year. It's something that we should think about all the time. Thinking about other people is an important thing for your health, and it's important for our society.
1-800-462-7413. To Partyville, Wisconsin, we go now. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
I'm calling because my son, he's 6 years old, and he keeps getting reoccurring ear infections in the last, well, he's had throughout his whole life, but in the last year, he's had over 8, and they're predominantly only in the left ear, at least for the last 3 years, and they referred us to go see an ENT, and he's recommending putting a tube in his left ear. And I was just curious if there's anything alternatively that we could do.
Well, first of all, when you go to an ENT surgeon, they're going to recommend tubes. That's what they do. Now, I'm not saying that it's not just reflux, but for some ear, nose, and throat surgeons, it is ear reflux. And, you know, not to cast aspersions on them and say that there's some other reason such as financial, it's just the way the training is. In other words, they put in lots of tubes. After tonsils and adenoids, tubes are either number 2 or number 3 in surgical procedures that are done in the United States of America. Now, in Europe, they don't put in tubes. They don't put them in it. They're much, much less commonly done in Europe. And if you look at the rates of deafness and chronic issues, they're about the same between the United States and Europe. So you have to question whether or not your child really needs tubes. That's the first step. Yeah, that is step number one. I got a question. When you went into the surgeon, what did you think of the surgeon?
I liked him. I thought he was a nice guy.
Okay. So you like that? That's very important when you look at a surgeon. You want to get a second opinion from somebody else, and how important is that? You want to get a hearing. How old is your child?
He's 6.
He's 6 years old?
Yeah, and he actually did have a hearing test.
And what did that show?
It showed 0% hearing in his left ear, but the bone, that was fine, hearing bone.
Okay, so the bone conduction was fine, and there was 0 on the ear conduction. Okay, that is a significant finding. In other words, that means that there's something going on in the middle ear. So for a child such as that, the chances that they'll need tubes are very, very high. So that's a perfect example of you went to a surgeon that you liked. You had a test that was done that was very important that showed that the inside of the ear is working. That's the bone. That's a way of testing that. But the middle ear is filled with fluid and may not be working. And sometimes tubes in that case can be very, very useful. But prior to that, sometimes an antibiotic for 4 to 6 weeks, such as a sulfa-based antibiotic or another antibiotic, can also make a difference. If that does not work and he has 0 hearing in one of his ears, but we know the inside of the ear is intact, then tubes are probably a good idea.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you. Why did you ask Zorba whether she liked the surgeon? Who cares? You want the surgeon who does a really good job.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think you have to have a surgeon who you relate to. I think I'm not. I think that's important. That's something that I've learned in the time that I've been. That surgeons who are mean and nasty and are not nice basically are not the surgeons you want to go to. There are enough surgeons around. Now, if that's the only choice you have to live with it.
Yeah.
But if not, I think bedside manner is extremely important. And I think if you have a surgeon who doesn't listen to you, that's a surgeon who's not as likely to give you the proper preoperative training and postoperative training. They just want to go in and cut. And the reality is what happens postoperatively is as important as what happens operatively. And so I think the time has come to say you just want to go to a surgeon if they have good hands. And I think that's bogus. Mm-hmm. I think you want a surgeon who goes because they have good hands and they have an appropriate bedside manner and they're thinking of you as a patient in a compassionate way.
Interesting.
That's the optimal surgeon.
Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with stress and allergies. Even though allergies themselves can be stressful, is there any proof that allergies can be worsened by stress?
Absolutely, 100% there is proof. So I think the one of the most interesting studies was a study that was published last year that looked at hay fever sufferers, and they basically measured their response on the skin. They prick them with a little wheel. It's called – well, it's not a wheel. They prick them with the allergen, and they look at the wheel, how round it is and what their response is. And they discovered that after a stressful day when they were giving speeches or they were stressed at work, their allergic response was far greater. And I think there's very good evidence. There's recent evidence that people who meditate on a regular basis actually have a more robust response to influenza vaccine and to other vaccines that are around. So I think that, in fact, indeed, stress is a factor, and the more stressed you are, the worse your allergies may be. So I don't think it's a myth. I think stress does make allergies worse.
And you would recommend meditation in order to kind of
meditation
calm
with
the stress.
With antihistamines or the proper nasal spray. I wouldn't recommend meditation alone because it doesn't tend to work.
If there's a myth stressing you out that you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. Our toll-free number. To Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, we go now. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen.
How can we help?
Just a quick question. I wouldn't say recently, but over the course of the last couple of years, I've lost 100-plus pounds, but I've got the issue of loose skin now. A lot of my weight loss is up front, and then over the course of time, I've managed to maintain a healthy lifestyle with exercise and diet, but my skin has not, I guess, tightened up. I didn't know if there was anything I could do or...
Well, what you're talking about is actually a common problem with people who lose massive amounts of weight because the skin is still hanging there. And because the skin is, has been stretched, it really hasn't been stretched. It's that the skin has grown around the body. It doesn't really stretch like a rubber band. It grows around the body. And over time, if it doesn't get better, for some people, they actually go through surgery in order to correct that skin. For some people, it's actually got a term, pannus, P-A-N-N-U-S. Sometimes that skin actually with fat that's around there too. How old are you?
I am 24.
24. First of all, congratulations on losing that weight. That's great. I think I would give it may take 6 months or a year, but at 24, your body is still very, very pliable in what it will do. Certainly with people who are in their 40s and their 50s, it's less likely to occur. But in your 20s, you may see a tightening of the skin. And if not, you may not, and you may decide to save the money and have a plastic surgery.
Would working out or any other exercise help?
Well, exercise is good. How much you get a lot of exercise at this time, I take it.
Yeah, I run about 4 miles a day and then do about 30 minutes of core training. Yeah.
Core training is great. Running is great. The weight loss is great. I would give it some time. There's a very good chance that your skin is going to remodel. That's what it has to do. It has to remodel and say, hey, I don't have to be around. And over time, this may work, but it may take another 6 months to a year, so I would hang in there. And if that fails and you don't like the way it looks, then you're going to have to save up to actually go to a plastic surgeon and have a surgical procedure done. And that is the other way to do it. And I know people who have decided to do it, but I also know people who have been successful with good core training over time that are in their 20s. So hang in there, and I think the chances are really likely that you may see some result. And congrats on losing that weight. That is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. We appreciate the call. Almost time to go, Zorba, but before we do, it's time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. One of our recent recipes called for sherry. You said that a good tip was to use cooking sherry. Well, Tom, a retired chef from Lexington, Kentucky, took issue with that, stating, "No, never use any wines labeled cooking, as these are made of inferior wines and are salted to make them undrinkable. Always cook with wines you would drink, no exceptions. When a recipe calls for sherry, use a palpable dry sherry, and when sherry is called for in a dessert recipe, use a sweet sherry. Never, never use cooking wines." He does go on to say that he agrees with your tip about using vermouth if you don't drink wine but need it for a recipe. But Tom, cut it out. This isn't agreeing with the doc. This is disagreeing with the doc.
I love it. I love it. You know, I never knew that about wine. I never knew it, but they sell it in a grocery store. They don't sell it in a liquor store, and so it doesn't have the same rules, and they probably because they salt it and make it, you know, untenable.
But you never noticed any problems
with it. I have regular wine around the house, and I occasionally have cooking wine and then use it because I may have it on the shelf, but I've never actually tasted it to see that it's salted. Yeah. So the answer is forget the cooking wine. Forget the cooking sherry. Use the stuff that you actually are going to drink. I think it's a great idea. Oh. I stand corrected.
Oh, Tom, you not only disagreed with the doc, but you corrected the doc and made him change.
Yes, yes. And I'm smiling about the change because I have learned something useful.
Well, if you want to whine about something Zorba did on the show, send it in for our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send your complaint in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom, and stay well.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Cheech and Chong, also known as Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, are the two guys on the other side of the hazy glass.
without the doobies.
When the smoke clears, our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark. Hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1211Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.